here's the dilemma, Shannon. I know we should be talking about COVID, and I'm guessing we're probably going to talk a little bit about it.
I think we have to.
Well, I'm so over it, though.
Well, except the world.
Isn't tired it? Of talking about it. Well, I know it's it's important, but what the hell are we going to do?
But you know what? And you bring up a really good point, because I think there is a lack of interest in the pandemic across the board. So, but there are some great, like, there's some great stories in all of sports right now. There are some really impressive stories.
Well, and yeah, there's just as many stories that are like disasters.
Right. No, but there are stories to be talked about. Well, by the way, Bob, did you see the news out of Jacksonville last night?
Yeah, I did, John.
Did you see the news out of Jacksonville? Yeah, and what happened? Because you were in the last 2 days.
Well, I wouldn't have fired him.
You are convinced that Urban Meyer was, you know, the be all and end all just because he coached the Buckeyes.
Well, no, it has nothing to do with him coaching the Buckeyes. He was the best coach in college football when he in all the places he was before Ohio State. And then he was still the best coach in college football. Well, one of them when he was at Ohio State. Having said that, what is the problem with the Jacksonville Jaguars? They can't score.
Ownership.
No. Well, maybe. But on the field, the problem is offense. They can't put the biscuit in the basket or the pigskin in the end zone, if you will. And who did they hire? Who did they name to replace Urban Meyer for the rest of the year?
Darren Bevell.
The offensive coordinator.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, but they've got to limp through now, Bob. The season's almost over.
Well,
they've
fine.
Got to limp through because Mr. Khan has to go and do a search for the next best great college football coach that can't coach in the NFL to coach his team.
No, he's not going to hire another college coach.
Well, here's the thing. This and if you have listened for the last 24 hours, everything that has been said about this guy, it's just shocking that he got the job. It is shocking that he got the job. I mean, he views himself as a demagogue. He really does, but as you know, that is the world of college football.
Well, yeah, and I mean, look at he hung up a crap load of W's. And at some point you go, well, maybe he's a great coach. Maybe he's got an ego that won't, you know, that gets to walks in the room 5 minutes before
hold on,
he does.
Hold on. Maybe.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But he wins. Or he won at the college level.
At what
now
cost?
What we're gonna find out is he really a crappy coach? And a great recruiter? Or is this really a crummy, crummy football team that Jesus couldn't coach to wins?
I'll tell you this. Chances better than I like Urban Meyer's.
Well, I'll tell you this. I think it's very suspect when you replace a guy in midseason or late in the season, where they got two games left, and replace him with
four, I think.
Well, replace him with a guy who has arguably failed even worse, the offensive coordinator. Yeah. With the Heisman Trophy winner, number one draft choice at quarterback, who has been at best mediocre.
Sure he has.
Has been given a complete pass on responsibility.
Oh, I don't think Lawrence has been given a complete pass. You know, I think there are people that see his potential. But, you know, the bottom line is there are a lot of people, by the way, they're speaking up today, that's saying there's no way that Urban Meyer has the aptitude to be a professional football coach.
He might be right.
And where he works so well is in the college system where it is the classic pyramid of he's at the top of the pyramid and the rest of the world's close to the bottom. And it's, you know, this is a very woke world now, Bob. It's 2021. What Urban Meyer thought works, whether it be at Utah or Florida or Ohio State, doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work anymore at any level inside of football or outside of football.
I don't know. I don't.
So if you treat people poorly, and there are allegations that he treated a lot of people poorly, particularly his assistant coaches and a few players, Is it justified if you win? Is it justified if you win?
Yes, it's pro football.
I think that pro football.
I'm not agreeing with it.
No. But
that's the reality.
If you were the player that he abused and yelled at more and more, you would turn around and tell him to go take a flying fidoo, wouldn't you?
I don't know what I'd do. I mean, I don't really understand the culture today in professional sports, but certainly football.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know where that's at. I mean, I grew up in an era and played every sport. Coach said something. You said yes or no, sir, three bags full, sir.
Yeah, I know. But I think the world has changed.
Well, I don't doubt that, John. But I, you know, if you're asking me how I would respond, I don't know how I'd respond.
I mean, that's why Nick Saban lasted a year in Miami.
Well, there's that.
You know, it's a different world. And, you know, it's when you can sit there and yell at 18 to 22-year-olds, it's a lot different than yelling at a 32-year-old that's a behemoth of a football player.
Well,
it's a lot different, man.
Well, more importantly, a guy who's got a whole bunch of zeros in the back of his paycheck.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
That's the fundamental difference.
Yeah. So anyway, you thought Urban Meyer was never going to be fired. No, I said
I didn't think he'd get fired this year.
No, I said, I said to you,
I didn't say never get fired.
I said to you, they're going to fire him at the end of the season. You said, no way.
Yeah, that's what I said. I didn't say he's never going to get fired. Wow. Like in the history of the world, like, is he going to coach until the day he drops over dead? No.
No.
But I thought, and I still would, not knowing all the details. I mean, look at if Jacksonville wins the remainder of their games, they got four left, you said?
I think so, yeah.
Well, if they win three of four, if they win two of four,
if they win,
I will apologize on this program.
What?
If they win two of four, I will apologize on this program.
Hugh McLarty,
misrepresenting the quality of the football team, because I think it's a pile of dung.
Okay. God, I'm cheering for Jacksonville this weekend now.
Yeah, go Jacksonville.
Go Jags.
There's a phrase that is rarely used in
go Jags
any country.
Yeah, that's right.
Outside of the 15 mile radius of Jacksonville, Florida, I can't imagine why you'd be a fan of the Jaguars. I am
cheering for the Jags now. Just to hear that apology, big boy.
Good for you. All right, we have some guests.
Yeah.
To join us and a variety of topics to discuss, knowing Shannon, mostly hockey related.
Sure. Why not?
Well, because that's where you live.
No, I live in Mississauga.
You
so live do, the by ho- the way, so do you.
You live in the hockey world.
Hockey town.
And that's not where I live. But as usual, I will bow down.
Oh, please.
To your desire.
You are so full of it today. You are so full of it.
Does it show?
Yeah, although the pictures look nice on the wall, I must tell him.
Thank you.
All right.
Eric Duhacik, Mike Harrington, when we come back after these messages. It's McCowan and Shannon back on the program. I don't know why we have these two guys here.
Oh, they're good.
I feel they're good.
Oh,
well, but I feel like they're bad luck.
Why is that?
So, well, there's Eric Duhacik sitting in Calgary, where the Flames may never play another game because everybody's got COVID. And last time we had Harrington on, the Buffalo Bills were putting the New England Patriots in their rearview mirror, and the Buffalo Sabres were off to a dramatically successful start to the NHL season. And now everything's back to normal in Buffalo. These two teams can't win an inter-squad game.
Hold on. The Sabres had a very impressive victory in Winnipeg the other night.
Oh, well, big deal. Everybody beats Winnipeg lately. No,
don't say that.
I take no responsibility for any of this, as you well know.
Well, where are the Sabres in the standings, Harrington?
They're sixth in the Atlantic. They're 27 or 28 overall, and pretty much where people picked them before the season.
Exactly. Thank you. And how about the Buffalo Bills?
They are not where people expected them to be before the season. Right now, they're in the number seven spot, and teetering on the edge of not even making the playoffs in a year when most of the world thought they might be a Super Bowl favorite.
I rest my case. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, I'm done. I can go, right?
Yeah.
Well,
Mike, all you need to really say before we get to Eric, all you really need to say just to justify it to Sabre fans is we're ahead of Montreal. But then again, everybody's almost ahead of Montreal.
The more interesting thing is being ahead of Ottawa, because to me, the comparison of Buffalo, Ottawa, and Detroit was going to be very interesting this year. Three teams all in a rebuild, all trying to essentially do the same thing, and Buffalo's in the middle of that trio.
Let me ask a question, and this is more to the hat trick. I just thought of this the other day. So there's about 900 Calgary Flames people who are, you know, have got COVID.
Okay, the official number is 30, all right? Just so you're aware.
Whatever. A lot. Let's put it that way. How many Toronto Maple Leafs have gone down with COVID? John Shannon, to you first.
Right now, zero.
Even last year?
They had a couple. They had a couple, but you're right.
How is this possible? Does this make any sense to you? Pat?
It doesn't, because the Flames were one of those teams that up until this point had managed to dodge the bullet and had been really fortunate, because of no COVID absences, but also no significant injuries. And and it just completely came out of the blue. I mean, they are the opposite of the Sabres, a team that was not highly thought of at the start of the year, got off to a really good start, and for the most part have been able to maintain that, you know, until they, you know, got shut down. They're right there, at or near the top of the Pacific Division, especially if you base it on points percentage. And I think a lot of people were trying to figure out what's gone right in Calgary. And then all of a sudden they get home from a road trip. They've got Carolina and Boston coming in, two really good tests. They falter a little bit. And somewhere in the midst of all of that, there's this COVID outbreak that, you know, again, if you connect the dots, there are also COVID outbreaks in Carolina and Boston. And you'd have to think that somewhere along the line, those teams being in Calgary playing the Flames, you know, commingled the virus somehow. So, and I suppose it's the larger question of how does that happen in the world? You know, you can be as cautious as you can. Every player has been vaccinated twice. I understand a lot of them have had the booster shot already. It's proof that you can still contract this illness, even if you are vaccinated. According to the latest from Bradtree Living, who made a media availability yesterday, most are either asymptomatic or are having mild symptoms. So they believe that once they recover, they should be able to get up to speed pretty quickly. But everyone's mystified. No one can really understand, you know, what precipitated this particular event. And I'm sure that they're trying to figure it out. But by the time they do figure it out, if they ever figure it out, that they'll presumably be back to playing and you know, seeing if they can, you know, pick up in terms of on ice play where they left off, which was pretty good.
The other thing is you have to wonder too about we talk about 30 Flames employees, players and staff, but you've got to think families are a big part of this as well. And you have to wonder if that's where there was, and I'm not trying to be negative, but the lack of vigilance of COVID when you can, you know, families and friends go out for dinner, not wear your masks in the restaurants. And this variant, this Omicron variant, does travel much easier than even the Delta variant did.
Yeah, no question. I mean, you know, a lot of, you know, remember, athletes are young men. A lot of young men have young families, and, you know, kids are in school, kids are in hockey, kids are involved in programs. You know, there's back and forth. You know, you can be as cautious as you want. I think it's fair to say that most people probably today, this month, aren't as vigilant as they were, you know, 12 months ago, you know, prior to vaccines being readily available, when you know, we were washing our hands 20 times a day and shopping for groceries twice a month and not seeing anybody and canceling Christmas. You know, that cautionary response has probably been slightly less in the last little while. And as you say, John, you know, the doctors and the scientists are telling us this is a a variant that's more transmissible, and you are where you are today.
Well, one of the questions we're going to get to here, if we aren't there already, is how long can this go on? How long can you just continue to play games and allow 15 to 20,000 in hockey and 60,000 in football into a stadium? The National Football League has been racked with COVID cases. Mm-hmm. Well, so has the NHL.
NBA too, yeah.
They all have. We have seen in the province of Ontario, for you two guys who may not be aware, that as of, I think, yesterday or the day before, they're going to reduce attendance in arenas and stadia to half. Now, I don't think there's any place else that's done that, is there?
No. But how are they going to figure out, you know, the first event in Scotiabank Arena is the Raptors and Golden State. Those poor people bought tickets probably in July, and now 9,500 of them have to be told, sorry, you can't come. I mean, how in the world are they going to do this?
I don't want to be the customer service agent making that phone call.
Right. And Leafs season tickets. I mean, it's not, this is why this is so much different this year. Last year, there were no fans. You could reschedule games. You could do what you wanted. Now you're talking a tremendous amount of money and a tremendous amount of logistics. How are the Leafs and Raptors, who are going to be the first guinea pigs for this, going to actually do this when you have to dial back on the number of people you could have in your arena?
Well, what is the
I was talking to a senior executive with an NHL team who raised that exact point, Mike, and he said it's a logistical nightmare. It's just a logistical nightmare. And we were talking actually in the context of, okay, so there is a greater chance every day that the NHL will not participate in the Olympics. And so you do have about a 3-week window there to possibly reschedule games. Like I don't see the Flames playing a game before Christmas. So if that's
Case,
no, I don't. I mean, I could be wrong about that, but 4 games canceled already and 3 more games next week prior to Christmas. If they have to reschedule 7 games, there's no possible way that they can do it without spilling some into that February window that would open up if they decided to withdraw from the Olympics. But as someone pointed out, you know, there are people that are buying tickets, you know, in the Christmas season because it's an expensive thing, but it's a Christmas present for Uncle Bob or Aunt Joe, and aren't interested in going to a game in February because, you know, they're not going to be around for Christmas. They're going to be back in Toronto or Vancouver or wherever their homes are. So, you know, like every single ticket holder who's purchased a ticket for an event has a particular reason for that. It's their favorite team, that, you know, their children are home from college. And so if you have to deal with, you know, potentially 8,000 to 10,000 unhappy subscribers for every single game that gets canceled, you don't have the staff to do that. It's going to be an overwhelmingly challenging situation for the people that work in administration. And you know, the executive that I spoke to said, I don't have a good answer for that either. It's going to overwhelm us.
Well, one of the intriguing things, and we've talked about this a little bit this week, is the notion that either the NHL players are going to go to Beijing or they're not going to go to Beijing. That's not really necessarily the case, because this is a decision, as of right now, of the individual players. If one guy wants to go, he can go. If 10 guys want to go, they can go, and the rest can stay at home. And you have that 3-week window, and the NHL has already said, well, you know, maybe we'll look at rescheduling some games during that 3-week window, which is going to be complicated.
Very.
But what if you have one or two players from each team at most that go to Beijing? Would you still schedule NHL games?
Sure.
Or reschedule them? I would.
Sure. Yeah. It'd be just like the World Juniors. Guys leave college hockey and they go to the World Juniors. The University of Michigan is still playing. Owen Powers at Team Canada's camp. You could do the same thing with the NHL and guys going to the Olympics.
Yeah. I think that's probably, if the players get, it's allowed to be their decision still, because there's still a chance that the NHL may say, you know what, this is too urgent, too important for us, and we can't afford to let anybody go. We're going to have to negotiate with you again for something else in the collective bargaining agreement, but we can't let anybody go because of whatever reason you want to pick. Gary
has already stood up and said it's up to the players.
But he has the authority as the commissioner in the bylaws to say no. He still has that authority. And it may come. It may come to that. If we end up with a lot more postponements and games, he may have to pull that card out, which is what he did for Pyeongchang. He pulled out. He said, nope, no one can go. And so that's still a very much a possibility. The other thing to note is, you know, there are, you know, Calgary and Buffalo are the two of the arenas that don't have NBA teams. And, you know, NBA games are going to be in that window. Concerts are going to be in that window. It is not as simple as saying we're going to move all those games to February 4th to 20th. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be a challenge.
Sure.
Yeah. The other thing is I haven't heard anybody mention this. If this continues in such a serious level, what happens to the All-Star weekend? Not that it's a major, but it's a major event for the league. Do they put the All-Star weekend on hold in Las Vegas? Do they?
I'd do it right now.
Well, you have to wonder if that isn't being discussed. I mean, they got an outdoor game in Minnesota on January 1st, and they've got the All-Star game, and then they got two outdoor games after that, one in Nashville and one in Hamilton, that you know, have to be a concern.
Well, but we've been told, guys, that if you're outdoors, you have far less risk of contracting COVID. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they can, if they want to have those outdoor games, they can run that up the flagpole and salute.
And the tickets for the outdoor game in Hamilton between the Leafs and Sabres just went on sale to the general public today.
Right.
So there's going to be 40,000 people at that one. And I think they're kind of holding their breath and hoping, well, it's an outdoor event. It's not in an arena. It's the middle of March. We should be okay. But you're right. I've thought of that too. I got questions about that when the Ontario thing came down. I reminded people that's indoors. The Sabres Leafs game in Hamilton is outdoors, but you're right. It's another big event and 40,000 people. I don't know.
And for the record, that is a Sabre home game, that's not a Maple Leaf home game.
That's right. Just like a Citi Field in 2018. It's a Sabres home game in Hamilton where there will be 40,000 Leaf fans. Good luck.
Well, I mean, look at it. It's a good deal for the Sabres because, I mean, if there's 40,000 people there, that's like, 10, 15 Sabre home games, total attendance?
Oh, that's harsh, Bob.
Yeah, it's harsh. It's about five.
It may be harsh, but it's pretty close to true.
It's about five. Yeah, I mean, it's been tough. Their attendance has gone up, for the record, in the last five games. But, you know, now instead of 7,000 a night, there's 9,500 in there. It's still not what an NHL team should be. But, I mean, I'm sure they got paid as if they were going to have a sellout crowd in KeyBank Center, and then they go on and the rest of it goes to the league and the Leafs and HR and all that. But I've thought of that too. I've said to myself, geez, you know, what's the point of going to Vegas anyway if you have to have all these protocols? It won't be any fun for anybody. And the league has to get the season, make sure the season is going fine. They have these outdoor games. If you're not going to the Olympics, you might need those days in Vegas to be making up games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a bunch of other stuff to address. Marc-Andre Fleury hit, 500 wins?
Yes, sir. 500 victories.
That's about as quiet a 500 wins as you can get, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I love Marc-Andre Fleury. I just, and is he one of the best goaltenders in the National Hockey League? Yeah, he probably.
The question is what? He won the Vezina Trophy last year and then got traded. But yeah. The question really is, guys, is he one of the best goalies of all time in the National Hockey League?
Well,
okay. So, John, when you ask that question, when you say all time, you know, top three, top five, top 10.
Well, let's say 10. Let's say 10. In fairness.
And again, in goaltending, it's so difficult to compare across the eras, right? Because, you know, there were all those goaltenders from the Jacques Plante and Glenn Hall era that also had tremendous, you know, wins. And they played in an era when there were also ties. So you could argue that ever since the NHL introduced overtime and then shootouts to break ties, that anyone playing after that era have had their totals inflated because they're not stuck with all those pesky ties. Like I think Mike Vernon, who's I think a Hall of Fame candidate that never seems to get in, would be much higher up on the overall wins list if he didn't have to play in an era where there were a bunch of ties. But I would say in my mind he's in that 8 to 12 range. So right on the cusp of the top 10, not someone I would consider being in the top five, but I think he's had a remarkable career. And I suppose, Bob, I'll take issue with your original point, which was that he's had some of the quietest 500 wins in history, because he was a number one overall draft choice, a star for Canada's World Junior team, won championships on a Pittsburgh team that had tremendous, tremendous talent, was the single most important player on the Vegas team that set these incredible expansion records, something that will never be seen again. And after like a horrible start to the season, seems to have rediscovered his game again in Chicago. And then on top of that, what sets goaltenders apart? Most of them are, or a lot of them are quirky, oddball, pointy people that that players kind of skirt around in the dressing room, and they leave them to their
rituals. I thought you liked Mike Vernon.
They let them do their thing, but they're an odd collection of ducks. And then you have Marc-Andre Fleury, this regular human being, big smile on his face, created so much confidence in the players that played on any team that he was on because he wasn't such an odd duck. So to me, when you add everything up, his personality, the way he carries himself, the success that he's had consistently throughout his career, I think he's had a remarkable, remarkable career. All-time great, in that second tier of all-time greats in my mind. But in terms of if I'm an NHL general manager and I want, to define abstractly what I want in a goaltender, Fleury checks all the boxes because he's, there's just so many people who've played goal over the years that don't have that kind of presence that he has in a dressing room that glues teams together. I think that cannot be understated when you evaluate the full body of his career.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm agreeing. In fact, Harrington, what do you have to say?
Well, the biggest thing that has struck me about Fleury, I watched the ceremony before the game when they honored him in Chicago for the 500th. I watched the game. He actually won the 500th. And look at the adulation of that team toward that guy. And he's a new player on the Chicago Blackhawks this year. And look at the way those players have already gravitated to him in the middle of December, in 3 months' time. And that just tells you about the impact Marc-Andre Fleury has on every team he's been on. And the Vegas thing, like Eric said, is never happening again. We saw in Seattle why Vegas isn't happening again. We're seeing it right now. And a huge part of that was the goaltending. What's been Seattle's downfall this year?
The goaltending. Grubauer, yeah.
And Marc-Andre Fleury did that. And now in Chicago, they're not a great team, but he's making a huge difference there. And just he's bringing along those players. Look at the adulation they have shown him. The fans showed him. He is an all-time top 10-ish goalie for sure. And here's the other point, Bob, and you've talked about this in the past a lot. In baseball, the starting pitching, you really just can't judge by wins anymore. There's too much else going on. They don't let him throw more than 100 pitches. Well, in hockey, you damn well can still judge goaltenders by how many games they win, because they can be specifically responsible for their team winning and losing. A starting pitcher's out after six games. The goalie the bullpen blows the game, whatever. The goalie can win the game.
Well, there's only one player on a hockey team that is credited with wins and losses.
Right.
The goaltender.
What I'm saying is he doesn't – you could easily, blow the game and you lose. The goalie can win a game for his team, and for him to win 500 games and do that over three teams, it is a remarkable accomplishment.
When you look at what Fleury did in Pittsburgh and Fleury did in Vegas, he lost his starting job in both places. That's the amazing thing, is that this guy, in my opinion, will go to the Hall of Fame. I don't have a vote. Eric used to have a vote, but he will go to the Hall of Fame as one of the greatest of all time. And there were times in his career, particularly Pittsburgh, when he had the concussion issues and everything before there were really concussion protocols, It was a roller coaster. And for him to bounce back as well as he did, remember, when they won one of those two Stanley Cups in a row, Matt Murray really was the goaltender of record. And Fleury took sitting on the bench very well. He didn't take sitting on the bench very well in Vegas. And that's a different story. And that's one of the reasons why he's not there anymore. I just think his journey has been a fascinating one. And for people still view him in so many ways as one of the most positive lights in the history of the game.
Well, I might be inclined to put him in the top five, but I'd have to think about it of all time. That's how much.
Well, he's not ahead of Patrick Roy and Martin Brodeur. And those are the two guys he's behind in victories right now.
Well,
You have to have Dominic Hasek in your top five, I think. And then again, you know, how do you compare goalies across the era? I mean,
sure,
you know, should the Terry Sawchucks and Jacques Plantz and Glenn Hall be in the conversation, or do we have to talk about them separately?
So. Yeah. And the other thing is you talked about the rules and regulations of adding overtime and overtime losses. Equipment changed too. Equipment changed more drastically in that position than any other position on the ice.
Well, let me say this much before we take the break. I can't think of another goalie in the NHL right now I'd rather watch play than Marc-Andre Fleury. You know, for a goaltender, you know, with his style and, you know, almost that throwback kind of little guy flopping all over the place, dramatic, you know, almost not a night goes by where he doesn't come up with some save. You go, wow.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. If Canada and the pros go to the Olympics.
Yes, he's my number one goaltender.
Is he your number one goaltender?
100%.
Who else? Because the people that run Team Canada understand that if you're in the gold medal game, what do you want? You want a calm, seasoned veteran who is not going to flinch in that moment. So to me, there's no question in my mind that if it doesn't look like Carey Price is available, who is the other person that can provide that kind of a presence? It's Marc-Andre Fleury. 100% right, Bob.
Yeah. And even if Fleury is available, you know, you're going to be wondering about what kind of shape he's in, how much game action is he going to have.
You mean Price.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got to take the break. We're a little over time. We'll come back with more. Lots to talk about when we continue after these messages. With Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, with Eric Duhacik of The Athletic. We haven't had a chance to chat with you guys about the return of Bruce Boudreau to coaching in the National Hockey League. You know, Gabby's a pal of ours. He's been on this program. He actually dropped in surprisingly yesterday.
Made a cameo.
And five games, five wins. I am not the least bit surprised. This is the kind of thing that he has done repeatedly. And I guess the only question is long-term. Does the message hold water for an extended period of time? And can he win a few playoff series? Because those are the question marks. But Harrington, hard to argue with what Gabby's done in Vancouver.
Yeah, you know, this sport, it's amazing. To me, you should be firing your coach all the time because – teams fire the coach and they get a big bump right away. We've seen recently Stanley Cups won in Pittsburgh and St. Louis. You know, look at the job King is doing in Chicago this year. They got rid of Jeremy Colleton, where they probably should have done it months ago. And now Vancouver, I don't know what they were waiting for in Vancouver. That team was dead. And good on the owner for getting Bruce Boudreau in there. I think they would have had a bump no matter who he hired. But Bruce Boudreau was the guy for the Vancouver Canucks, and they look like a different team, and they've played five games, and that's the impact Bruce Boudreau can have. And, you know, the funny part, people speculated, should Buffalo go get Bruce Boudreau? And you know what people said? Well, gee, he's lost a lot of game sevens in the playoffs. Who cares about that? Get in the playoffs, right? I mean, and we've seen already the impact. I'm so impressed by Bruce Boudreau already in Vancouver, and you've seen some of the players who look dead, Elias Pettersson and guys like that, look different in Vancouver now. And can it last? They're going to have to keep building. They got Rutherford there, but yeah, they're on a different plane already. They arrested their problem in December. NHL GMs, owners, fire your coach.
By the way, Mike, you do know that Bruce had multiple interviews in Buffalo last summer, huh?
Oh yeah. I don't think it was ever that serious. I think they were giving the job to Don Granato all the time. But I know Bruce was interested. It was near Toronto, near mom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's closer to mom, actually, than Toronto.
Right.
Well, I mean, Montreal, too. You know, there's all kinds of places that could have looked around and found Bruce Boudreau.
Yeah.
And it is a very strange thing in the National Hockey
League. Well, you know who I'm blaming, and Eric, you'll appreciate this. I'm blaming Daryl Sutter. Because I think that when coaches do get moved, owners look at the other guy and look and say, well, holy, I mean, there's a veteran coach that can turn things around quickly. Well, that's what Daryl's done. Daryl's done that in Calgary before the break. And
true.
And so it's all Daryl Sutter's fault, Eric.
You're not wrong, but to Mike's point, I think is a good one. You know, so Daryl is the opposite of Bruce Booth. You know, he is still Daryl Sutter. He will never change. There's the Sutter way, and there's the wrong way. That's always been the philosophy of the family. You know, he is very hard on the players and expects a lot, but has a way of communicating. A fairly regimented system that the players have bought into and are executing very well. And it's a night and day different team than the one that they had under someone who I consider a very good coach in Jeff Ward, but wasn't getting nearly the results, was essentially the same team. If anything, the Flames are a worse team on paper today than they were 12 months ago, because they lost an important piece, Mark Giordano, to the Seattle Kraken in the expansion draft. And you know, if you look at what they did to replace him, you know, they brought in Kudryavtsev and Zadorov. And, you know, I mean, there's a demonstrable fall off in terms of the quality of their actual defensemen. But Daryl has a recipe that has worked in so many different stops. One of them requires above average goaltending, which they've been getting not just from Jacob Markstrom, who's the starter, but also Dan Vlotter, who they picked up from Boston in a trade. But look at the way they, you know, these offensive players are playing on the back check. I mean, Johnny Gaudreau, you know, he's become the new Mark Stone. Like he's back there. He's got the quick stick. He's intercepting passes. He's turning plays up. They play really fast. And even though they are maybe not, if you were doing sprints from one end of the ice to the other, there would be a lot of players on that team that you know, wouldn't be in the Connor McDavid, but they play fast. And so, but Daryl's personality isn't upbeat and bubbly the way Bruce's is. And so there are just different ways of getting to the same finish line in terms of approach. But specifically related to Bruce Boudreau, I mean, that's what I wrote my last column on. And what really struck me, and you guys have to deal with this all the time too, is the way social media rushes to judgment on something in 30 seconds. So I think it was Elliot Friedman that was the first to tweet out the possibility that Bruce Boudreau would be going into Vancouver. And I think it took, you know, 6 or 12 hours before the team actually got around to making the official announcement. And then if you looked on the responses to Elliot's Twitter feed, it was terrible. Failed coach, you know, washed up, old man. I mean, it was just universally panned this hire. And I'm thinking to myself, these people don't know what kind of a personality he's got, what, you know, what he can bring to a team that is just dead. Like just, they were just waiting for the other shoe to drop. They knew that Travis Green was not going to be there. And there was nothing, there was no life, there was no emotion there. And what do you need when you don't have any life and you don't have any emotion, but you've got talented players? You need somebody to come in and build them back up. And that's Boudreau. And I thought his press conference was so great because most of these coaches that come in, you know, they're buttoned down and they got the shirt and they've got the prepared answers and they spout cliches from the coach's manual, and they don't want to go in this direction because that's private. And oh, it's just, it's unwatchable. And then you've got Bruce Boudreau, you know, he's excited. He's relaxed. He's speaking with his hands. You know, like if you didn't know Bruce Boudreau, I bet you a lot of people in Vancouver didn't. It's like, wow, this guy's really something. I mean, someone said like he's hockey's Ted Lasso. And I thought that's a really good way of putting it because that's who he is. And that's what that team needed. And so You know, it's what drives me crazy when people rush to judgment and want to dismiss somebody that's, you know, behind Scotty Bowman, you know, one of the most successful regular season coaches in, of all time. How is that a failed coach? Like, I don't understand that. That's just the world that we live in.
And that's the same, by the way, it's the same reaction they had when Jim Rutherford's name popped up too.
Yeah.
And Jim Rutherford will not disappoint in Vancouver, in my opinion. I think he'll be exactly what the doctor ordered there.
Oh, I think both hires, the two hires combined, are about as good as you can get, all things considered. And it was great that they went outside the organization, outside the Southern BC, you know, former Canuck, whatever.
Yeah.
And
they had to change the culture, Bob. You're absolutely right.
Well, a couple of other things before we let you guys off here. Is this Ottawa Senator thing possibly real? This was a team, young team, that many people thought might take us, you know, at some point they're going to take a step. And maybe this year was going to be the year they took the step. Well, if they took a step anywhere, it was backwards.
Mm. Well, they had COVID too, right?
Yeah, but until recently. And again, a lot of people think the Florida Panthers are as good a team as there is in the NHL, and the Senators just smack them around like they were nothing. Harrington, what do you make of this Ottawa team?
It's hard to figure out. They are starting to figure it out, though. The last four or five games, they have been appreciably better, and you can't help but look at that Florida game and, you know, forget about 8-2 for a second. You look at that in any context that they won at Florida was going to be an aha moment. But to go in there 8-2, I really think they have underachieved. The COVID's a factor. They should be better than they have been to this point. It's still a long way to go. Their season isn't going to be judged by making the playoffs or not. Their season is judged by how much exponential progress they can make. And there's a lot of time for them to make a lot of progress. And maybe they just, you know, had a bad rut. They didn't have a good training camp. You don't know how things go in that regard. Mm-hmm. COVID hits, and let's see how the next 30 games go for them, because the signs are getting much better the last four or five.
But listen, their biggest issue was that, I mean, it goes back to this conversation every time, is they put their faith in Matt Murray as their goaltender.
He wasn't good enough. You know, I mean, Buffalo had the same problem in goal. They're starting to fix it because they brought up their kid from Rochester, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. If you don't get saves, it ruins your entire team. It ruins your offense. Your defense has no faith in the guy behind them, and I think they lost faith in Matt Murray, and that was the guy they had put their stake into, and it makes a big difference.
Oh. One guy that I'm watching on Ottawa, and John, I'm interested in your take on this, is Thomas Chabot, right? Mm. So he's a guy that is probably, I think the last time I checked, was in the top five in terms of time on ice minutes in the National Hockey League. Hadn't scored a goal all year. Looked on paper like he was having not a good year, and had played himself completely out of the Olympic picture. You know, I'm looking at everybody else's Olympic roster projections, and even though Canada is really weak on the left side, I don't see Chabot on anybody's list except mine, of course. And then, of course, he's picked it up lately during this surge in terms of the minutes that he's played, but I was trying to watch him throughout all of this, and I thought he was playing pretty well, and I think he's picked it up again. So I've got him on my Olympic team, you know, partly because the left side isn't great, but I think he's a real the one sort of key guy on that in that group that does tend to get overlooked, because I think he's an elite NHL defenseman. And so we focus on Brady Tkachuk, rightly so. You know, Batherson's been excellent. Norris has been excellent. Stützle's coming. You know, they're fun to watch up front. And it's easy to see how the goaltending has let them down. I look at the blue line, which almost no one talks about in Ottawa, and I see a guy like winning teams need a clear number one. And I think Chabot is becoming that guy. And I haven't seen, you know, like I know the Olympic Brain Trust met to reduce the long list to a shorter list, and I'm not sure, you know, where Chabot ranks in there, because I haven't done any primary reporting on that. But I think he should be on the Olympic team if there is an Olympic team, and I think he's the guy to watch, because there's still, you know, last time I checked, I think there's still 850 games to play this NHL season. It feels like we're you know, Christmas is usually mid-season, but I looked it up last Friday. I think they just played slightly over 400. It's probably 450. Now there's 1,312 games this year because there's 32 teams. So close to, there was 900 left when I looked it up, which was only a week ago. Lots and lots of hockey left, lots of time to make up ground. Just look at the ground that Vancouver's made up on Edmonton in a very short period of time. It's, you know, it isn't over yet, I guess is what I'm saying. The hockey season, even with all of these delays and everything else, was supposed to go until the end of April, and we're in the middle of December. So I'll be very interested in seeing where Ottawa is at the Olympic break, if there is an Olympic break, because if they continue to play like this, they're going to creep up and make things interesting in the second half.
You're not wrong about Shabbat, but simply just look who he's had to play beside. I mean, that's one. Nikita Zaitsev has been, you know, a bit of a sieve on the blue line for Ottawa. And Zub has probably been their second best defenseman. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they put a lot of stake in having Michael Delzato, the veteran experience. I mean, Thomas Chabot's been an island in so many nights for Ottawa and put a ton of pressure on him. And I'm with you. I with what he does with the puck, I would have him on my Olympic team for sure.
So here's a real quick point on prospects. Chabot, Heiskanen in Dallas, Rasmus Dahlin, Elias Pettersson in Vancouver. Everyone wants prospects to be like this. Up, 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 up. Prospects aren't like that. Prospects are like this. Young players are like this, and they hit their valleys. And you say, what's wrong with Chabot? What's wrong with Dahlin? They're just never going to go all the way up like that every year after year. And that's what you have to get used to until they become much more seasoned pros. When they're 21, 22, it's just not going to be that straight line up all the time.
Well, especially with defensemen, right?
Right. Yes. Tougher than any other position.
We got like 2 minutes. The Montreal Canadiens have won 6 out of 30. This is the worst. This is the worst record or fewest number of wins in 30 games in the history of the Montreal Canadiens. And what do we perceive they're doing about it?
Trying to lose 52 more.
Nothing.
I hope Carey Price comes back. But I mean, they were a fluke last year. They had a hot goalie. Shea Weber was a lunatic. They were the flukiest Stanley Cup final team ever. The Leafs couldn't get out of their own way. You know, they shouldn't have completely collapsed, but you take away Carey Price and Shea Weber, and I suppose it's not a surprise.
Well,
they were a middle of the pack team last year. You're right. 17th or 18th overall, if you rank the teams 1 to 31, and caught fire in the playoffs. And guess what? That's happened lots over the years where, you know, a team, you know, if it was your week, it ended up being your year. So I think that anyone that overrated Montreal going into the season did so at their own peril. You know, you need to go back and look at the 56, you know, game standings and say that's a middle of the pack team. And there's an awful lot of teams in the middle of the pack. And all it takes is one or two key injuries, something to go off the rails early, and people collectively lose the confidence and it just blows up. Like, I can't explain why Jeff Petry, a very good NHL defenseman, has 2 assists this year. I get injuries. I get it all. I don't understand that. It makes no sense to me. And you're right. You take Shea Weber out of the mix and you take Carey Price out of the mix and they get exposed. And, you know, Caulfield hasn't taken the strides that say Trevor Zegras had. I think a lot of people had, you know, Caulfield, Zegras, Caulfield, that's the rookie of the year chase. Well, one guy is in it and the other guy completely is not. So, but I'll be interested. You know what, Bob, your answer, the answer to your question is, until Jeff Gorton gets settled in there and gets to know those people, not much can happen. But he's a general manager, and he proved this in New York, that if things have gone off the rails, he's not afraid to go out and shuffle bodies out the door at the deadline to change the chemistry. He needs to get to know that group. Still needs to hire a de facto general manager, but the decisions will always be his. And I think they will be the most active team, you know, at the trade deadline. They're the team that I'm focusing on. I'm doing the big board stuff. You know, I'm looking at Sherrod. I mean, they've got pieces that other teams are going to be interested in.
And at a certain point, maybe not right now, but I assume in the offseason, they're going to have to find a major league coach. Because I think the one thing we've learned in these 30 games is that Dom Ducharme was really good for the Halifax Mooseheads, but he's not very good for the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, they could have had Bruce Boudreau. There's another team.
You get commission or something? You get commission?
Oh, but now that you mention it, I ought to, shouldn't I?
You're not taking credit for him to get the job in Vancouver, are you?
Oh, hell yes. Of course I am.
Okay, good.
He was on the podcast 2 weeks before and telling us all about his coaching philosophies. And I have no doubt whatsoever that the ownership in Vancouver listened to that and went, well, there's a good idea.
Yeah, Francesco is an avid subscriber to the Bob Account podcast.
As well he should be. Why the hell wouldn't you be? Boys, time is our enemy. We thank you as always for yours, and hopefully we'll chat real soon. If we don't talk, and we probably won't, Merry Christmas to both of you. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Same to you.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back after these messages. Well, there you go. Our thanks to Mike Harrington, Eric Tkachuk for joining us on the program. A little bit of COVID talk, a little bit of hockey talk.
Yeah. Now, do you think the league should pause, Bob? Do you think we should like take 10 days off and get everybody quarantined in their homes and then start again? Because in theory, you'd have to believe that in 10 days we'd be okay.
What is it? No, why? What would be
I don't know. I'm throwing out the question. Okay.
If you go back to doing what you're doing, guys are going to get sick. That is the reality. I think the only option they have is to go back into complete isolation, to go back to what happened a year ago, where you played in front of no fans and you went nowhere, and or maybe 2 years ago.
No, that was in Canada for in 56 game schedule. There were no fans in the Canadian cities, at least.
Well, but I mean, like in total isolation, like the Edmonton Toronto situation in the playoffs.
Yeah. But don't you think the world has changed with the vaccination?
No. Well, no, I don't.
Okay.
I mean, people are still getting sick. Are they getting as sick? Of course not.
No.
But you're not letting anybody play if they test positive, are you?
No.
The issue is not how sick you are.
Yeah.
The issue is, are you COVID positive? Mm-hmm. If you are, you can't play. And it seems clear to me that this Calgary situation is just the beginning. Well, it's going to keep happening. It's
certainly concerning. I mean, 30 people in a week. In a week. Oof.
You know, there's a fundamental issue here, and the only way to address it is to say, all right, we're not going to play, or you're going to stay at home, you're going to go from home to the rink, and we're not going to travel. Well, you know,
that's going to be the enhanced protocols are coming, but we'll have to see what they really are. So.
Yeah, well, and just for the record, this idea of the Premier in Ontario to reduce attendance by half is just ridiculous. Either shut it down or leave it the way it is.
Yeah.
Maybe mandate that people wear masks in the arena, because most of the people don't seem to be wearing a mask. We got to go. Bye. We'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.